Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikeshaw. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will sort out your exact quote to save you money on your bike, moped and scooter insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Right, on to today's guest. We're bringing you an absolute belter. Probably the coolest man on two wheels. In fact, forget the wheels. The coolest man there is. He's handsome. He's cool. He's got the hair. And unlike Prutz, he can just about fix anything. He's double R'd. And you must know him from the BBC's series, The Speed Shop. He's a lovely guy as well. The housewife's favourite, Titch Cormack.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, we are too, mate. Prutz, what does it feel like? I've been relegated to probably the third most handsome man on this pod this week. You've gone down to number two. That's a first.
I was gonna start by saying, I was just going to take it out of your hands and say there's two super tough guys here from Hull that have experienced a lot of things in their life. We're just going to park you and Thomas at the side and just get super manly and testosterone based. But of course, that would be utter rubbish. Sitch, thank you so much for joining us. Your energy is evident straight away when we said hello. Thank you so much for your time. I mean, the Speed Shop, S-Bomb, this gorgeous place down on the south coast, which when you sat here in North Yorkshire and it's blowing a gale, we're missing it dearly, given the fact you can sit out front and watch the world go by. So much has happened. Ex-Special Forces, from Hull to Grimsby, into the military, down on the south coast. Let's start. S-Bomb, where does that come from?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I get asked this all the time. And it's a bit one of those, I tell various people different answers. But there is an actual meaning to the S-bomb. And I'll let the one go. This will probably be a first for you, okay? Not many people know where this comes from. It's actually a phrase that we used to use in the Special Forces. It's called dropping the S-bomb. Now, dropping the S-bomb is not unloading in your pants. It's actually to do with if you are working in a covert environment and you get lifted, then you may have to show out your identity and who you are and what's going on. And we would refer to that as dropping the S-bomb. So that would be showing out who you are. So that is the truth and the meaning behind the S-bomb, you know, and that's the first time publicly I've actually mentioned that.
I normally get in trouble for dropping the F-bomb on here, so like I've never heard of the S-bomb before. But how cool is that to actually have something that is so meaningful to you? I mean, as Prutz said, you've got a really cool shop there on the South Coast, but the wording behind it, the meaning, it's so personal. I mean, that must be really nice to be able to use a term that was so close to your heart.
Yeah, I mean, the choice was that or mayhem. So mayhem was what we referred to was our call signs when we were talking to the jets. So the JTACs, so those are the people that talk to the jets and we bring in airstrikes and stuff like that. When you're doing that, we had call signs and Paul's call sign, where I was based, we were mayhem call signs. So my personal call sign was Mayhem 5-5.
Wow.
Nice. Rather cool. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? That sounds very American rather than our usual UK call signs. But that was my call sign. It was going to be Mayhem Motorcycles, but that was already taken.
I suppose as well, Tits, given it's where you are in the world. It's gorgeous down there. And I remember a couple of seasons ago, I was working with Sky and we were covering Bournemouth against Nottingham Forest. And I was chatting to Graham, of course, a big part of the shop there via DM. And I was hell-bent on trying to get down there to come to the shop and see what it was about. But I think the day that the game was on was the day that you were shut, which unfortunately meant knackered the whole thing. But having got that close and knowing that part of the world through my family, mayhem may have stood out a little bit in the genteel streets of the South Coast. S-bomb's a little bit more palatable, is it? Because unless they think the Sons of Anarchy are going to start rocking up and tearing the place to shreds.
Exactly. And I think the thing is, it always, before I sort of told people what it was, it always spurned that little bit of interest and curiosity. People were really interested in what the meaning was behind it.
And your life, we're not going to go back to the beginning, we won't have time because you've packed so much in, but in terms of your love of motorbikes and your love of engineering and being able to work on stuff, was that always part of your military life or was it something you grew up with working on engines and stuff? Because, you know, I joked aside at the beginning, but we've seen on the Speed Shop and other things you've done, you clearly know your way around an engine.
Yeah, do you know what? I learnt a lot of it in the military, but that was by no means my my sort of job as such. You know, I was a Royal Marine and I was based initially at 4-5 Commando, and then I ended up at 40 Commando, which is down in Taunton. But I was what was called a Grav. That is a short term for a gravel belly. So that is your guys that go out and do the business. So I was doing that and I didn't have that sort of that background. However, I always had this curiosity about machines and bikes, and I was just keen as mustard on it. And I actually learned hands on.
Being able to talk about it, Titch, from the very start to where you are now, I mean, we could chew your ears off for hours. What one thing that really struck me talking and looking at what we were going to speak to you today, that history of what it is to be in the Royal Marines and that part of the world that is completely alien to a former journeyman footballer and a fellow that ran round very quickly in very small shorts to wonderful success in Ewood. But there's a real fraternal side of what you do from what I can see. There's a family side of it as well from what I can see. I watched a wonderful little 15-minute video on YouTube where you built a bike to take over to Normandy for the D-Day landings, because your grandfather was on the beach on D-Day, wasn't he? That is just... Yeah. And given what we've seen of the 80th anniversary this past summer, it just... I mean, talking about it now just sends shivers down your spine, because it was the generation that did for the generations that came afterwards and paid the ultimate sacrifice, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, such selfless existence, really. These young men, and I refer to young men, and I'm talking about the ages of... some guys were lying about their ages to actually go on this. I mean, imagine that. There was young kids at like 16 years old who were lying about their age to try and fight in the war. You know, it was that significant, and people were that driven to defend the UK, Great Britain, as we are, and our country, is that they were willing to sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice, give their lives for it. And these guys went over there, and certainly I've researched hugely into the Second World War and history. It's a big thing. I'm sort of super keen on it. We'll chat about that in a little while. But obviously, D-Day was a huge part of it, because my granddad landed at Sword Beach and was part of 4-5 Commando. And subsequently, having done that, lots of people came forward, and an amazing guy who actually talked to me about the main picture of all the guys in there. And his uncle was two rows back from my granddad. And the amount of information and pictures he had was phenomenal. It was just outstanding what I learned then after it. And the boats, I even found out exactly which landing craft he went in on. And the fact it was hit by airburst artillery before they landed. So the guys all at the front were killed, unfortunately. And they had to, and the ladders down, because it was a landing boat, not a landing craft.
Yeah.
They had to put the ladders down themselves, fight through the bodies, get the landing, the ladders down, and then get onto the beach.
Oh, God.
But the more I learned about it, I didn't know this. And it was just amazing to find out all this information about what they went through.
Just moving on from there slightly. So your grandfather's there. You go into the same line of work in inverted commas. And then fast forward a little bit further along, and then that handsome face pops up on the telly. How do you get from one to the other?
What's the lead? Well, there's a little bit of luck in there, but as we know, you make your own luck. Certainly, the motorcycling and the racing and stuff like that, that was my sort of adrenaline fuel. That's where I got my kicks from. And inevitably, when you look at some of the sort of sports that guys do, in many ways, I was a sort of a bit of a control freak as such, because the motorcycles, I did my own motorcycles, I did that, I race my bikes. If I crash, if I stuff it into the barriers, it's my fault, you know. It's on me. Whereas I didn't like to, I shied away from things like your sort of your skydiving and stuff like that, especially because when we were jumping, people were packing out chutes, you know. And inevitably, when we were doing that, the lads are picking up like, nah, that's a malfunction, that one. I'm not having that. And then everyone's like passing this one chute around like, he's just said it's a malfunction. Why? What's wrong with it? You know?
I tell you what, just to calm my nerves, there's a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from to get terrified like we are now. Never miss an episode if you subscribe on YouTube. Let's get back to bikes, Titch.
Yes.
your first bike and your current bike and anything in between that you can tell us.
Ooh, right, okay. Right, so one of my first road bikes, very unimpressive, was the GSXF 600 Suzuki.
Yes.
It was like a, it was like a plastic encoated, very sedate machine, and that was one of the first sort of road bikes that I used. Modern bikes, the bikes that I've got now, well, I think I've got in the region of about 20 bikes.
Heavens!
So there's quite a few.
All built yourself, well, or, I mean, or a mixture of all?
It's one of those things that if you played golf, you wouldn't just have one club, would you?
Great analogy. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to try that one back.
Love it. Exactly. So if anybody's struggling to justify it to your missus or anything like that, say, hey, some people play golf. I don't pay all the fees to go on the golf course. That's very expensive. What I do is have a bike that I can cut for all situations. So I'm going to need a few.
What's your top three then, if you could? I mean, I'm sure you love all your bikes for different reasons. And I know you like to more than tinker with them yourself. You build them. What would be your top three then in terms of, you know, if you've got a sporty bike, an off-road bike, whatever it might be? What's your top three?
So I've got a 2003 Triumph Bonneville that's scrambled. And that is my go-to. Jump on the bike, starts on the button. I've run it all over. I've run it at Mallee Mile. I've run it at the Dorset Dispatch Rally. I've run it around motocross tracks. You name it, it's done it. I've done green laning on it. I go to London. I commute to London on it. It's it just does everything. It's fantastic. It was one of the a build we did in 24 hours. So I got an old bike, which was actually one I'd sourced for one of the guys. He'd not been riding it. Left it in his garden. I got it. Got all the bits together, and in 12 hours, to be fair, we did it in one day. And we just stripped it, but I buzzed it all back, scrambled it, and it's wicked. I love that bike. You know, it's absolutely fantastic. Off-road-wise, I'm currently riding a Gas 350. Mm-hmm. So that's a four-stroke 350, and it's an absolute weapon. Absolute weapon, that thing. It's phenomenal. I'm racing tomorrow up at Rogers Hill Raceway in the first winter warmer. It's been raining a lot. It's going to be bogging. It's going to be horrific. But that just plays into my hands. The worse it is, it's a bit like a Western Beach race, you know, that when it was horrific, that's when we kick in. So I'm hoping it's really nasty. So it'll be a war of attrition.
You know, you're the total opposite of a fair weather rider like me. You just like the dirtier, the better, the tougher conditions, the easier for you. Yeah,
the
love
worse
it
is, the better. Yeah. And then I've been racing a lot of vintage stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So doing vintage motocross, which is phenomenal. What a brilliant scene, by the way. Yeah. If you wanted to do to get into that sort of thing. And the great thing about that is the bikes now, again, another one, a good sell. They're an investment. You know, you don't lose money on them. So these old bikes are really desirable. And I've got a Honda CR480. Mm-hmm. So that's a 480 two-stroke. If you've ever ridden a two-stroke, it's a 480, that one. It's an absolute animal.
Yeah.
And a Husqvarna, 1983 Husqvarna CR500. And that thing, is an absolute beast. You know, when you're riding these things and you think what absolute men they were back in the day when they were sending these things full chat, you know, they were amazing to be able to send these things. Sort of your Dave Thorpes and stuff back in the day racing the CR500s. Proper men.
That's the theme of the podcast, then, is it? Proper men. And you can, if you listen to this, you can pick out who you think is a proper man on it. You mentioned that the Triumph that you built. If anyone's listening to this, that's, I mean, we're all tinkerers. We've all got varying degrees of what you class as a toolkit, but you're obviously extremely qualified and experienced in that type of thing. But is putting a bike back together, taking it apart, checking out what works with it, obviously away from potentially the brand new stuff, which is quite computer based. Would you urge people to go and throw themselves into that? Obviously, you need the time and the patience to be able to do it. But we all talk about things that we do nowadays that takes you away from staring at your phone or kind of engaging with something right in front of you. I presume that sat there with your bike, tinkering, putting it together, taking it apart, building something in 12 hours, must give you a tremendous sense of accomplishment when it's done, Sitch. Would you urge other people to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is that the reason I was I used a bike of that era was because it's carbureted. You know, it's on carburetors. We're not dealing with all the sort of electronic gadgetry that's on these machines now. Unfortunately, the modern machines, as wonderful as they are, you change a set of indicators out and the thing goes into limp mode because, you know, the ECU doesn't register it properly. And that, this is the problem with it. Whereas the old machines, you can really do what you want with them. You know, you can turn them into anything that you want to. That build was really, really good because I call it a build. I wouldn't call it a massive sort of a custom bespoke thing because we weren't making parts and we weren't doing it and changing the frame. It was literally I've got all the parts together that I wanted to do it, the sort of high exhaust, all of it, and everything bolted on. And credit to the people who manufactured the gears. It was Carl from Down and Out. I got some bits from him.
Up in Rotherham. Good set of boys, though.
Brilliant lads. And I tell you what, his parts were beautiful. They were really nice. There was no, you know, a lot of times when you're buying some parts, there's a lot of jiggery pokery. I'm gonna have to redrill that bit bigger because they're like that. None of that at all. Everything just fitted. It was brilliant. And another company called Tech TEC, they do a lot of Bonneville parts, and I got their exhaust and everything like that. Do you know, it's this beautiful exhaust, and they're quite intricate. The turns on the pikes drop straight in, drops everything. You know, and that's why we were able to turn that around in one day. That sort of, if you want to change that, because it was an old sort of maroon Bonneville that was a bit of a stay, and all of a sudden it's this wicked scrambler. And I buzzed all the paint off it, took all the paint off the tank, and then wrote Triumph on it in a Sharpie on it. And then went over it with lacquer, you know. And I was expecting to get some spots of rust on it and stuff like that. But the more I sort of leave that to get that sort of patina on it, the better it looks. Beautiful. You know,
I did that with my Harley. I stripped the paint off, same sort of thing. Painted Harley on it and lacquered it, and it looks good. It looks weathered. It looks patina. It's decent. Do you know what strikes me listening to you talk today about, you know, parachutes not opening properly, being in war zones, taking a bike apart and putting it back together? That fears me with dread. Is there anything that phases you? You're the go-to man, it seems to me. Like, can you fix like a leaking tap and all that as well? Are you good around?
I'm all over it. Right. So I mean, back in the day, I did a lot of loft conversions with my brother. He's a joiner, so I did a little bit of work with him, and we were into everything: plastering, plumbing, bit of sparking, all that sort of stuff. I could turn my hand to just about anything.
Titch is embarrassing me because literally. I take my bike apart and I look at it and I'm like, where does that bit go? What did that? If I don't label everything up, I've got no idea.
It's when you put it all back together and you think, what's this for? And you've got a couple of bits in your hand.
That looks really important. I'll keep hold of it.
These will be all.
Yeah,
I'll shamefully admit I put together like an IKEA chest of drawers, and there's a couple of bolts at the end. I'm going, oh my lord. Hopefully it'll be all right. But in terms of putting a bike together, nah. No
when you're
idea.
Doing the IKEA, do you use the little Allen key that they
yeah,
give?
Yeah, of course I do.
That's made out of cheese.
That's the only tool he's got.
Made out of cheddar, isn't it? And you're like,
shreds through it.
Yeah, absolute garbage.
He says this, Titch. He gets that many freebies. I don't know the last time he put something like that together.
This is true. Yeah,
That's the rarefied air that man breathes. going back to S-Bomb, and you mentioned just before we start recording that it's a hub, isn't it? You've had special guests in the night before that we're chatting that hopefully all behave themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get it being that kind of community hub where Project Pit Stop comes from, which I think that is a super important thing. And when you were telling us about it, which I hope you will do again now, you can see the sense of pride on your face that what it means to people together, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Initially, when I first started this, I had this vision of it being a motorcycle shop, and there would be a little sort of cafe bit to the front. And then inevitably, you've got to be sort of quite fluid with business. And it turned out that the cafe then became a bar as well. And that became the main focus. That went really, really well. And off the back of it, we ended up putting on functions for people. We've done weddings, all sorts of stuff. As I say, we had the police in the other day for one of their functions. Is that JP Morgan even? They did it in here. but fair enough, you know, they really enjoyed it actually. So we do sort of functions and all that sort of stuff. But then we've got such a community here, is that with the help of the Movember Foundation, mm-hmm. so distinguished gentlemen's riders, people may know the Movember Foundation behind it, which is about men's mental health awareness. There was a guy called Mike who then applied for them for a grant, and he created the concept of the Pit Stop group, which is then a community where they bring people together. They have a doctor in there. We have mechanics on site and stuff like that, so we can repair bikes and stuff. But we also have projects that people can get involved in. So the current one is, as you spotted the whiteboard behind me, this one, which is Roy's build. I don't know if you'll be able to read that. I'll give you a look at the bike, by the way. Oh. She's looking a little bit. Okay, that great, is it? But that's how this starts, you know. It's called Roy's Build, mm-hmm. And this is the one when Project Pit Stop are coming in, and the guys get together, and each time they come in, we do a bit more. Everyone's allowed to put in their input. So the actual design and shape and style of the bike has been put together by the guys. And Roy was a wonderful old boy who used to come down the shop all the time. He was an ex-parachute regiment guy from World War II. Superb. I'd hear him come in well before I saw him because he was deaf as a post. And he used to call me Marine! And I'd be like, right, Roy! Yeah, fantastic old boy he was. Full of some great stories. But unfortunately, he passed away about 2 months ago. And his family donated some money to the shop because they knew how much he loved coming down here, and we looked after him down here. And what we decided to do was buy an old motorcycle, and we would create the Roy's Build. So Roy's Build, and I'm hoping this will be ongoing. So the builds that we do for Project Pit Stop will be Roy's Build. So we'll name them Roy's 1, Roy 2. And we'll build these bikes, and it's a fantastic sort of to be able to do this for people, and them come in, and it's proven to be really popular actually.
That's lovely, the fact that, you know, Roy's name can live on and his legacy will go through you and the shop there. You know, the fact that, you know, he obviously, you had a great positive impact in his life. He loved coming to see you and chatting there, and likewise he had a profound effect on you as well. So I think that's something you should be really proud of, the fact that, you know, he's going to live on and someone's going to get that bike and ride the bike and love it. And it's great. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, you'd have loved the guy if you'd have met him. He was fantastic. You know, he used to come in, still wear his beret and stuff. You know, with his beret on.
Marine.
Yeah, Marine.
Instantly stand to attention. Like, that's it. What? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. So that's really how the shop's developed, really. And it's going really well. It ticks along quite happily. At some point in time, I know it's inevitable that they're going to develop this building, so it's going to get leveled, and they will put a big block of glass flats in, because that's what everyone wants, isn't it? Don't they? What we need is more 2-bedroom flats. Yeah. Whack them everywhere. But unfortunately, yeah, this building's nearly 200 years old now.
Is it?
And as beautiful it is with it, it's got a lovely cast iron arch window to the front, straight out, looking over the water and stuff like that. But inevitably, it will go. So I will be sort of looking to move it, whether that be in the next sort of 2-3 years. Because I've sort of got to accept the fact that at some point in time, we're going to have to lift and shift. But we'll deal with that. Yeah.
So that's potentially on the horizon. Any more telly on the horizon?
Do you know what? I put lots of ideas forward. Lots of ideas forward that are super keen. But inevitably, as you guys know, being involved in television, everyone's like, yeah, this is brilliant. Superb. We'll get in touch with you next week.
Yeah, nothing at all.
Tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you give out all these amazing ideas and they're like, yeah, this is great. And it gets to a certain point and then nothing.
Yeah, it's a funny industry. It's a funny industry like that. And you know, you think, you watch other programs, you think, I could be doing that, or what a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
You know,
my idea. You know. you know. Yeah. And the feedback we got from Speed Shop was phenomenal. People loved it. And it was interesting, the sort of the demographic was, I think it was 49% women, 51% guys, which is super unusual for a build show. And I think that was really because of what we were doing, the build up, and why we were doing them.
The stories, you know, wasn't it?
All that side of things. So it appealed a lot. And the actual, the age range as well. It appealed to the young all the way up to, I had some old ladies stop me in town. Two old ladies, Doris and Betty, you know, and they were like, hey, excuse me, are you that man off the, and I was like, yeah, I'm that. Lovely TV show, really, really enjoyed it. You know, people that you would never expect.
Yeah.
And they really loved it. So for them to not recommission it was a shame. I don't know what they required us to do or do different, but they didn't.
How does it make you feel, though, the fact that, forget the TV commissioners, but the actual general public, the real people that matter, give you a lovely response?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
You're bringing joy to those people's front rooms. It's lovely.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And for me as well, with the guys I used to work with, they loved it, you know. They were absolutely brilliant. Yeah, really, really loved the show.
You've not struck either, as I don't think, Titch, as a man that's... I mean, that is maybe a slight door that's pulled closer, but you just switch, you pivot, you move somewhere else, something else comes up. Given what you've done, given where you've been, obviously there's a lot of stuff you can't tell us about, but and going back to what you said earlier on in the chat, which was the past is the past, can you sit here now and think of something that you would have been the most proud of, the high point in your life so far?
High point in my life? Do you know what? I would say... probably wasn't selection. It was probably passing out as a Royal Marine. Mm. So the background to that was because my granddad was a Royal Marine. My dad was a teacher. And obviously he used to play rugby for Nice Riding, by the way. David had played number 8. So it was quite a strict northern dad, as you might imagine. And I was a rebellious young man. But then he couldn't have expected any worse, because that's any different, because that's exactly what he was like, you know. So I was a bit of a carbon copy of my dad, to be fair. And but he said I would never pass out as a Royal Marine. You know, his dad, he spoke very highly of his dad, because unfortunately my grandfather died the year I was born, so I didn't really meet him. But he spoke very, and he was like, no, you won't be able to do it, you know, typical northern dad, like, no, you'll be back in a month, I'll see you in a month. And at no point in time was I going to do that. I was like, no, absolutely adamant, you'll see me when I pass out, mate. And that's what I did. And there was this change in my dad. It was brilliant. It was like a switch. All of a sudden, he was like, good man, good lad.
That's amazing.
If he's anything like my dad, he probably knew you could do it and told you couldn't do it because he wanted to see you push yourself. And like you said, the switch, so proud of you.
Yeah, exactly. But, I just sort of, like I said, the relationship with me and my dad changed from that day onwards. As much as I did everything else subsequently, I think that was probably the proudest moment. And of course, my mum there, my dad was there, and to get my green beret was a huge moment for me. Yeah.
Oh well, I'm gonna take you to an imaginary huge moment now. The last question, and I personally love this one, and it's gonna be a good answer from you. I know it is, because you've got a selection of bikes to choose from. So we want you to think of your dream ride. Where is it? What bike are you on? Who are you with? And what music are you listening to? What's your ultimate dream ride?
All right, okay. It's going to be Morocco. I'm going to be riding through Morocco around Zagora and through the desert, round towards Agadir and up.
Nice.
Absolutely amazing, fantastic out there. I'll be riding a full rally 450. I don't mind what make, if they want to give me one, just saying. Don't mind what make, full rally spec, Dakar rally spec 450. I'll be riding with my mates. As much as I'd like to say, I would love to take yourselves. Obviously.
Fine, keep it real. Yeah.
I mean, no one said that, Mitch.
Not saying you're not mates. I'm not saying you're not mates. Hang on. You just wind that back. But I would love to. I'd love to take Jippo and Lee, mm-hmm. and Billy, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah. Just so Billy, I can watch Billy ride with one hand through the desert. He'd have an absolute mare. But that'd be great fun, and he'd love it.
Oh, look, here it is.
No way. I don't believe it.
No.
Go in. I don't believe it. He's just walked in.
It's meant to be. Meant to be.
Here he is. And as if I'm just slating him.
I heard you.
I wasn't saying you, mate. I was picking you up.
Lovely. It was lovely till then.
Brilliant. I can't believe you just walked in.
All you got to choose now is your music and Billy's going to hear it.
Oh. I think I'm going to go with Kasabian.
Nice.
Fire.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Well, it's going to be hot out there, isn't it?
It's going to be hot out there. I'm going to be absolutely full tilt on a full Dakar bike. And, I'm on fire.
Nice. That sounds absolutely amazing, doesn't it, Ian?
Yeah, I love it. I think this episode's been on fire. I've absolutely loved it. I've learned more about you that I didn't think I'd learn. And, yeah, it's been brilliant. Loved it.
Oh, brilliant, guys. No, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's been great.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure, Titch. But sadly, of course, that's it for this week's Full Chat. Powered by Bikeshores, the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. They'll tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance and much, much more.
And as we said, a massive thanks to Titch. Honestly, mate, it's been superb having you on. I've got to say, I don't want to put pressure on our producer for our next guest, but so far, Series 2, we have smashed it. We've had some amazing guests. So thank you for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
We're going to get ourselves down to West. But I mean, it's a bit more of a trek for me from North Yorkshire. But given the fact that Ewan's in Southampton, he's got no excuse, Titcher, why he's not been there before at all.
Absolutely.
But we'll definitely get ourselves down. And if you've enjoyed this, please subscribe on YouTube and please follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And no doubt, this is our guarantee you'll enjoy every single minute of what you're seeing here.
They certainly will. Honestly, tune in next time. And thank you so much, as ever, for watching. Until then, goodbye.